and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality. Faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Up in the sky, look!
It's a bird! It's a plane! It's Superman!
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Beyond the Gauntlet, recorded semi-live at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. I think they've got a website too. Either way, it's on the episode post. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with my intrepid sidekick and owner of the Gauntlet.
I'm Chris Peddle.
Joined by the incredible canine today.
Canine. Nah, I'm Jeff DeHaan.
And our resident bald guy.
It's always a bald crack. That's okay. Genetics are on my side. That's why I got the sideburns. Jamie McBurney.
So yes, you are going to be our resident Lex Luthor today.
I am a villain.
So as you guys can guess, well, today's episode, as you heard during the intro, is Superman themed for Beyond the Gauntlet. Man of Steel opens everywhere across North America, and I'm pretty sure the world, on Friday, June 15th. I will be attending the 10 o'clock pre-opening screening thing here in Orangeville. So there should be an episode of opening night with me and the wife for that one, because I don't think Steve Saylor will be back from E3 this week. He's out in L.A., and so I guess, where do we start this week, Chris?
Well, I suppose we start at the beginning, where two delightful creators of Superman, Joel Schuster and Jerry Siegel, the men behind the creation of Superman, they started Action Comics number one.
Like in 1939, right? Was it 39 or 38?
I love how everybody looks at Jamie.
Apparently the Lex Luthor powers. So. I can tell you about the terrible things.
So we'll come back to you for that. All I ever remember about the origin of Superman is that Part of Our Heritage commercial that used to air.
Right.
Yes.
Stupid PSAs. I love them, but yeah.
Part of Our Heritage. The Superman one was always my favorite one, though, I have to admit. Because, you know, Joel Schuster, you get on that train, blah, blah, blah. It was so cheesy, but at the same time, at its heart, that's almost what Superman is, you know?
True enough. That's an awesome observation, because there's like it's got the forced exposition, like you were mm-hmm. saying. Like, you get on that train, you, and don't forget to talk to your friend this guy, and if this thing called Detective Comics ever takes off, like it just builds off of that.
Here, take this picture, this sketch I doodled. It might be worth something someday, as the Superman theme slowly rises at the end of the PSA.
You have such
delightful commercials.
I wonder how much a sketch like that might actually be worth if it was real.
Oh, I know that not too long ago, Action Comics sold last year, Action Comics number one,
like
only graded at like a 7.2 for $1.5 million. So, an original sketch would probably beat that.
Actually, there was a story, it was in the papers a couple of weeks ago, a guy who was redoing a house in Minnesota found an Action Comics in the wall. It was graded at 3.0 when they found it. Someone ripped off part of the back cover. Now it's rated like a 1. That tear alone cost the book's value to drop by $75,000.
That's the way it goes. That's the way it goes.
Which sucks, but even with that tear, I'm sure you're still getting a pretty penny for it if you wanted.
I believe they still said about $240,000 for even at the 1.3 it was supposed to be graded at. Ridiculous amount of money.
What is the highest graded copy available rated at?
I believe Nick Cage purchased one at an 8.3 or 8.4, and that was a couple years ago. I'm not sure what the circulation of it is right now, but it was somewhere in the $1.5+ million.
Now, where would someone find something like that? Would that be in like DC's archives?
There would probably just be people who just don't realize they have it, and it's in like something in their attic or something, and they trip over it. It's one of those.
I'm sure there's probably
we stumbled across it and didn't realize we were sitting on, you know, a magazine that was worth a crap ton of money.
Uncle so and so passed away. We were going through all his junk, and oh look, here's a comic book, and huh.
I mean, and what an iconic comic too. I mean, the cover mm-hmm. alone. I mean,
everybody knows that image.
Yeah. Everybody knows the image of Superman hefting the car over his head to getting ready to plant it into something.
It's been parodied countless times on different covers.
Yeah. Know? Well, and going back to what we were saying, like iconic is like a key word that when you're talking about Superman, you have to think like. The character Superman is like one of the few superheroes that exists sort of as this icon. Like Action Comics number one are almost like historical elements now. It's no longer just like necessarily a comic book. It transcends that. You know, it's a collectible.
It is modern myth.
Exactly. It's modern myth making. And that's what I think the whole thing that connects to Superman, to the point where Nick Cage named his kid Kal-El, right? And like it gets to that point where
even Superman himself is based off another iconic character. Jerry Siegel and Joel Schuster based him off of Hercules.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's why in the beginning, Superman could leap tall buildings in a single bound, was more powerful than a locomotive, et cetera, because his powers over the years have definitely increased. He's gone through several metamorphoses over his illustrious career since he was invented. I mean, every time he just becomes more iconic. I don't think there's a character on the planet that you could walk into the Congo with a Superman symbol and a Bible, and you'd probably have just as many people recognize the Superman symbol as the Bible.
It's one of those things where he's not necessarily everybody's favorite, but if you ask somebody... Think of a superhero. Superman is the first one that comes to mind, whether he's your
the paragon.
Or not.
Exactly. And he also tends to even cross over into like other universes. For example, in the Spider-Man movie, Aunt May says, "You work too hard, you're not Superman." So he exists everywhere, for example. And I don't think there's an example in Marvel or in DC where they say, "You're not Spider-Man." That's always everyone references Superman.
Yeah.
He literally is.
Well, he's one of the originals and definitely the least forgettable. I mean, it's what it is.
And if I were going to put a question to you guys, what I was thinking about, like about that idea of the myth of Superman, what do you guys think are like the essential components? Because like you were saying, Chris, like there've been so many different like variations on Superman. Things have come, things have gone, like parts have been added to the mythos and parts have been shed. But I mean, you think about things like kryptonite, for example, as sort of being the standard sort of weakness. And there is that, but what other parts do you guys think are like an essential part of the mythos?
It has to be the last son of Krypton because it puts him apart from us. Yet one of us, he's this alien God who walks among us to make us better. That's in essence, I think the core of Superman,
right? Yeah.
His unshatterable goodness is one of the other things.
To tie into that, I was going to say kind of the same thing, which I think a lot of that comes from his upbringing by the Kents in Kansas on a farm. I think if he crashed, I mean, I have the Red Sun here where he crashed in Russia, but I mean, if he, you know, staying in the States or whatever, but if he crashed in like a city, like say he was in Metropolis right away, he wouldn't have been raised by the same people. And I don't think he would have had those same values and morals instilled.
Oh, definitely. Ma and Pa Kent definitely instilled most of his moral compass that's there. But I mean, a person has to be willing to accept the moral compass as well. And I think that's part of his history as well. I mean, He could have chose to go, wow, I got these powers. I'm going to be a super dick now. But, you know, he never did. But it's because as soon as he was able to witness his heritage from Krypton and he found his ship and got the crystal that let him talk to his father, Jor-El. I mean, even Jor-El was a good, decent dude. So, I mean, even his birth parents were striving to keep morals.
I feel like if Clark Kent had been just a regular human boy growing up, I feel like he would have probably aspired to either be like a firefighter or like an emergency personnel or someone, because he has that moral compass to just that need to help people.
Exactly.
And he didn't have to go that route because, you know, he's Superman. So he had these powers. So instead, I'll be a reporter because then I can find out better where if there's an emergency and where people need me. So
yeah, and I think also a lot of his story, because he's one of the few superheroes who isn't just like regular Joe discovers mythic artifact and gains the power of whatever. He's actually got that, you know, that speaks to the immigrant experience, especially of the era that he was really gaining a lot of traction, that he speaks to this experience of a lot of people coming from a different culture, to the melting pot of North America, and then, you know, doing their best to not only assimilate but make things better. So I think that essentially is where the myth sort of connects to a lot of.
One of the things I think that makes Superman such a unique character too is he's one of the very few characters that comes to mind where his superpowered form is his real self. His hidden identity is not Clark Kent. His hidden identity is Superman, and his alter ego is Clark Kent. That's his superhero.
Is this a Kill Bill reference?
No, but I think they did bring it up a good point.
Yeah, I remember watching that because when we were talking about doing the show, I looked up that monologue because I wanted to review it because mm-hmm. I just remembered, you know, images of that. And I think it's a really interesting idea, like you were saying, though, that there's a relative flux in who he is. That he is, I mean, I would argue that it's more of a 50-50 thing.
I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, where he has both of these sides that he's dealing with. One is not more important than the other.
To compare him to Batman, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne is pretty much more of a facade.
Yeah.
Whereas he is Batman, like that cold, not really a whole lot of emotion, you know, thirst for vengeance and justice and everything.
Right.
Whereas with Superman, you see Clark Kent, that's still kind of him. It's just him sort of, he doesn't have to reveal everything about himself, but personality-wise, he's not pretending to be Clark Kent per se.
Right.
He's pretending to be a normal person, so he's not lifting cars.
What I think it more is, for example, if you take somebody like Batman, okay, Batman chooses to put the costume on, chooses to go out and fight the crime. During his off hours, he is Bruce Wayne. And he chooses to become Batman. Superman is Superman 24/7. He chooses to become Clark Kent. It's the reverse.
Yeah. And it's interesting if you think about like the comparing it to again to like I'd argue that the only other two superheroes that even come close are like Batman and Spider-Man because that's as far as being that well known. But if you think of those guys, like if you had a choice, if you're reading like a Batman comic and it's like a Bruce Wayne heavy issue, you're like, oh, just put the cowl on already, you know, we get it, you don't like being at social functions, okay, can we move on? But I was just thinking about, and Chris, I talked to you about ordering a copy of Mark Waid's Superman retelling from about 2002 called Birthright.
Yeah.
And I really want to read a copy of it because I've read about it, and the first four issues there's no Superman. The first four issues is just Clark Kent. And they're still, and like that doesn't sound in any way, like that sounds interesting. Because I think that he has sort of these two sets of parents and he has these values that are always going back and forth that are conflicted in him being just Clark Kent. I think that that's really part of the interesting thing about the character. Like I can read about what Clark Kent is doing and I care about what Clark Kent is doing. I don't necessarily care what Bruce Wayne is doing. Because he's rich and he'll buy his way out of it and put the cowl on and
he's
whatever.
He's not someone we can identify with. Clark Kent is literally the everyman. Bruce Wayne is this rich, aloof man who just kind of is all mopey and shit.
Really? Yeah.
Clark Kent, he's bright and he's happy with who he is generally. Yeah, he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders, but generally he's the same guy you'd run into walking in the Walmart or Target or wherever, whereas Bruce Wayne, you might run into him bumping into him on the subway, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I think part
almost,
of this,
almost get hit by his limo as you're crossing the street.
I think the thing with the cool Clark Kent thing is the fact that Superman is trying to fit in on this planet that he has been left on. He's trying to find a way to be the everyman at the same time as being the Superman.
Yeah, and which is something that I think everyone almost everyone in the world can relate to a certain extent. Who you are versus who people think you are versus the facade that you put up. And I think that's what really speaks to this sort of epic myth making in this character. Everything else is basically built off of that. The entire concept of superheroes having alter egos comes from that. And has been done to stronger extent and to weaker extent through various books and through the history of it. So I think that's really the key thing, I think, in the Superman mythos.
Now, some of the things that Superman has gone through throughout the years, some of the metamorphoses we've been talking about, like he's always been the paramount goody two shoes, so to speak. He's always had the Kents to to be his moral compass. He as Mike said, he is the foreigner from another planet, and he's lost all ties because of Krypton, a spoiler alert, explosion. but yeah. But I mean, some of his other powers have changed. Like,
well, originally he was just leaping tall buildings, whereas most of the time now he's flying.
Exactly. He has adopted the flying. He's adopted heat vision and X-ray vision, which is some of the things he didn't originally have.
Frost breath.
The frost breath is new. And let's touch on New 52. Apparently now he's a supercomputer for a brain. So,
they've had that since Birthright, haven't they? Where he's like a super genius too.
Like, yeah, that's one of the unnecessary things, because I think
and
part
he can
of...
see your soul technically.
Oh,
right.
Everybody forgets about that shit.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I don't think is necessary with Superman, because the fact that makes him a relatable character is the fact that he's just normal intelligence trying to punch his way out of situations. If he actually had the brain like a supercomputer, then Lex Luthor wouldn't be the problem that he is. And that's the most iconic mashup in comic history is Superman versus Lex Luthor, versus brawn.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love
their brain versus brain, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I'd love to touch a bit like that, like his rogues gallery, because that's really interesting is who are the enduring Superman villains. But I think, Chris, just touching on what you were saying, is that he's gone through all these like metamorphoses, like he's got all these different powers. But I think that's again, I'm putting my like high school English teacher hat on here, because that's what I do during the off hours. On hours? Anyway. The key thing about a myth is that it is flexible, that you can pile more stuff on it, and then stuff that persists, and the stuff that doesn't gets, you know, fall into the wayside. Mm-hmm. So the Superman mythos is so stable that they can pile all sorts of goofy crap upon that.
Blue suits.
Oh
red
man,
suits.
Yeah, I'm holding off. Like I love, and this is what I was talking to you guys about before. I love hate watching stuff. Like I love watching ideas fail. like Schadenfreude is like my motto a lot of the time. It's like you know, when I'm watching like the Next Generation has really great episodes of Star Trek, or like some of the worst episodes of Star Trek, and it's never between. So that's how I like my comics, really great or awful. Because like middling, I have no time for. But I think
if it's awful, you can still laugh at it.
Oh yeah, yeah, and there's plenty in Supes'
in what were you
storied
thinking?
History. But yeah, so I think because he's got so much, the story itself is so strong, all this stuff gets piled on and forgotten and brought back in and explored, but it still fundamentally stays, and it's really amazing that for a piece of modern myth that it's still going, and you mm-hmm. don't see that stopping at any point. But then to get back what we were saying. When you're looking at like his rogues gallery, like who are the Lex Luthor is the Superman villain.
Yeah. And the only one they've ever really given a shit to put on the screen outside of Zod.
Yeah.
And no one cares about Zod. I mean, Frank, like, where's the Brainiac? Where's Metallo? Where's Parasite?
Yeah. And
where's Darkseid? I mean, he's got a great rogues gallery.
But no one talks about it.
But nobody ever talks about it. It's always Lex Luthor, Lex Luthor, Lex Luthor. But the thing is, the thing that makes the whole Lex Luthor thing such a powerful story, and one they probably continually go back to, is the fact that you're dealing with a greedy human being that is genius-level intelligence versus the alien with superpowers, who has the unbreakable moral compass. So you got the guy who's actually from planet Earth, who's just a total dick but smart about it, versus the alien that really does have the well-being of the planet in his hands.
But then again, there's also been the counter-argument with Lex Luthor. Maybe he's trying to save us, because he thinks that Superman is just the beginning. And think about all the problems that have followed Superman to Earth. It's not like he's wrong.
Yeah, but would those problems have come to Earth if Superman wasn't there anyway? Well, would Darkseid have just come to Earth anyway? Would half the stuff that happened? I mean, you could take any comic character and say they helped create their own rogues gallery. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Everybody, one of Spider-Man's villains, Spider-Man helped create. It's like, it's ridiculous. How many problems have arisen out of Peter Parker just getting his nose in the wrong business, causing something to blow up in his face? So you could have that argument really with any character, but a lot of the alien threats that come to Earth Earth would have been long conquered if it wasn't for Superman. If Zod showed up out of the Phantom Zone with his hirelings and Superman wasn't there, then Superman would then Zod would have conquered Earth and we'd all be kneeling before Zod. You know,
nice. But I think that's another thing as well, is that you can argue both sides of the case. Mm-hmm. You can argue that there's, you know, and that's what makes a really good villain. You know, it's not like the blah-ha-ha mustache twirling tie people to the rail. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's Edward G. Robinson. but it's not like that's not what the Superman villains are. More often than not, they're relatively conflicted and there's more to them than that. Mm-hmm. There's really, like you were saying, Metallo, there's some really great Metallo stories. And that idea, like, he's a really great villain. The Parasite is a really interesting villain because they're all people who have
There's something wrong with them.
Exactly. There's something wrong with them. They're trying to deal with it. And it's almost like they're sort of a, how the Superman mythos can go wrong, how people can have power, but because they don't have the balance that Superman has, they sort of are thrown askew.
Or in the case of like someone like, say, I think Parasite, he has to eat things. It's not like he has a choice in
Yeah.
this. And, you know,
nobody's rushing to say, here's something that's not going to harm people and you can feed off of
here,
it.
Have a happy meal.
Like, you don't see super genius Lex Luthor trying to work on something to help Parasite.
Yeah. And if Superman's this awesome genius, he could have helped him. And one of the things that always kind of bugged me about him is the Fortress of Solitude, depending on who was writing the book at the time. Here's Superman robots and super lasers and battle arms. Just what the fuck?
my favorite was always my favorite was the giant key.
Oh,
that he always had the giant key outside where he just leaves it outside. And you know, if 100 Inuit got together and were like, you know what, damn it, we're going to see what's in there. And they just lift it up and throw it in. But
Superman's sitting on the couch in his boxers eating some Cheetos.
What are you guys doing? Get out of here. Come on.
I'm watching my Jor-El.
Dad was just telling me something real important. I got to rewind. I didn't record it. Nah, I taped over it for cheap.
You know, these crystals aren't cheap.
Yeah. But yeah, with Superman's rogues gallery, I like a lot of them, but I never feel like they get well represented. I mean, one character I really liked was a guy named Manchester Black. Pushed Superman right to his limit. There's I think it's called Superman versus the Elite. There's a DC
movie.
Okay,
yep.
And then there's the book. I think they're called The Authority. And in one vision, Manchester Black manipulates Superman into thinking he's killed Lois Lane. He's like, push me, kill me. You know you want to. You can be just as evil as I am. Superman doesn't. But you never hear about these guys
in the
mainstream.
Another one of my favorite stories, actually, and another villain that you don't hear about too much is actually For the Man Who Has Everything by Alan Moore. And the main villain for that is Mongul.
Oh, it's such a great story.
He unleashes this alien plant. Like he sends it to Superman for his birthday, you know, anonymously. So he opens it up. This plant attaches to him. And what this plant does, it feeds off of the person, basically gives him, what his heart desires most. So he, in his mind, he's still on Krypton. It didn't blow up and his life is perfect. He's married. He has a kid and everything's great. And when Batman, Wonder Woman, and Robin show up and they realize what's going on, they help him get it off of him. And when he realizes what's happened and that everything his heart ever desired that he thought was so real he could touch was gone, he just went ballistic on Mongul.
It has one of the greatest panels. Dave Gibbons, the guy who did Watchmen, was the artist on that. And the panel of just Superman going burn. I recommend if anyone out there has not read this story, there's a DC. I actually got a copy of it.
I think they actually made this into an episode.
I think
of Justice League Unlimited.
They did. But there's a DC Universe Alan Moore collection.
I'm holding right now.
Yeah, he's got it. That's why I've got a copy of it. You should have a copy of this to see some of the best Superman stories. And this actually, what I was thinking of is, why do you think it's more satisfying? Because I personally feel like it's more satisfying to see Superman achieve a moral victory as opposed to a physical victory.
Because physical victories are so easy for him.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's.
I mean, when the guy can press, can bench press a planet. I mean, a physical victory isn't that
it was actually funny that you mentioned something like that. There was this website called ScrewAttack.com, and they do this thing called Death Battle. And they had Goku from Dragon Ball Z versus Superman.
I heard about that.
They went through all the Superman stats. Superman can, in theory, punch harder than a supernova. I want you to think on a cosmic level scale, power level, that is. Superman physical victories mean nothing.
Yeah.
Because he is so retarded powerful. He can fly. For him to reach from the Earth to the Sun takes him just under a second and a half. He's traveling billions upon miles per second.
Well, heck, I mean, if you take into the account the first Superman movie, he flew so fast, he rewound time.
That's
why I think one of my favorite Superman villains is actually the imp from the fifth dimension, Mitzel Blitznik.
Yes.
All right, this is a dude that Superman has to use his mind to beat because physics mean nothing around this guy. He comes
bends
from
reality.
Bends reality to his whim, and all Superman has to do is get him to say his name backwards. And his name forwards is already a mouthful.
Yeah.
So, and Superman has time and time again gotten this imp from the fifth dimension to say his name backwards through trickery and everything. One of my favorite stories is Emperor Joker.
Yes.
Ed McGuinness and Jeff Loeb. This is one where the Joker tricks Mitzel Blitznik into giving him his powers, and then the Joker basically
takes over
reality.
Yeah.
And this is a dude you don't want taking over reality if you know anything about the comic books, because the Joker is a certified nut job. And he actually puts Superman in an Oedipus position where every day he is basically has to break out of prison only to get thrown back in. And every time he doesn't know who he is or why he's got these powers, but slowly throughout the book he figures it out. Now, I don't want to blow much more of the book, but fantastic graphic novel. It's Superman, Emperor Joker, but it's another one where Superman doesn't use his might to get out of the
situation. Is that the one where they have the reverse Justice League with like Fat Flash and Yellow Lantern? Yeah.
Yes.
And could for the Superman animated series, could they have gotten a better person to voice Mixie than Gilbert Gottfried?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is definitely the voice of the imp.
Mixie,
that is definitely true.
Also, a very good example, though. Like, you're right. He really is one of Superman's very understated and not often thought about villains. And he really, he's probably one of the only ones that Superman really has to use his mind to defeat.
And I wouldn't even call him so much a villain. He's just a pain in Superman's ass. I mean, he doesn't mean him any real harm.
Actually, yeah, because it's just fun for him. He's not trying to take over Earth. He's just
like,
bored.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
He's bored.
And again, it's like it's those stories that are the most interesting ones.
The other aspect to Superman that I find stories very very interesting is when you bring in the biblical undertone to Superman, the whole Messiah thing. Stories, for example, like Superman Retribution, where an old lady actually is saved by Superman and thinks that he's an angel and continually calls on Superman to get her out of these situations. And then the one time he can't because he's off saving somebody else, she gets horribly maimed and is like, God let me down. Really, really good story. And another one that I know that you just recently read for tomorrow.
Yeah, for tomorrow's outstanding.
There, again, is some biblical undertones because Superman has gone to a priest and has been like, you know, what did I do wrong? Why has this happened to the world? And some crap goes down. Written by Brian Azzarello, drawn by Jim Lee. Fantastic book. If people want a really good Superman story.
Yeah, and what do you guys then think makes a really good Superman story? So we talked about like the elements of him, they're more than just a physical, more than just him punching something out. Mm-hmm. That's not what it is. What do you think makes what are these qualities of like a classic Superman story?
I think him overcoming self-doubt, because realizing he is this Superman, literally he can do anything. But realizing he's just as frail mortally in the mind as just the rest of us. Like you just said, he goes to this priest, what the hell did I do wrong? In that moment of crisis. I want to be able to see the Man of Steel be able to stand on the head of a pin. And what I mean by that is he literally, with all this power, I can't fix it.
Right.
He has to be confronted by that mental problem. I really dig that. I like it when you can put heroes like that in the moral dilemma or stuff like that. I mean, you can't get that with Batman because he's going to realize at the end of the day, I'm Batman and I have to do it. Superman, he has a choice. If he doesn't want to do it, he can leave anytime he wants.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, it often connects to that idea of Superman not being able to do everything. When people think of Superman, they often think of like this god, to connect it back to this sort of nebulous religious idea, but that can do anything. But the whole point is being on Earth and still being only one man. There's a limitation to what he's capable of doing. And in For Tomorrow, for example, he tries to get involved with where was the war in that? I think it was a made-up place, Eastern country or something. And he gets involved with that war. But the whole thing is like he can use his power to stop the fighting, but the things that he can't control are like the people, exactly. And I think that's a really interesting to build off what you were saying.
Yeah, for all of his powers, people are still going to have hatred. People are still going to want to do what they do regardless. I mean, Superman can defuse, a billion bombs and crush a billion rifles and basically put out a billion fires. But if people
He's not going to stay me from hating you because you like a different god than me, for example.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that – you know, a lot of people fling kryptonite around as Superman's weakness, but I think one of his true weaknesses is the ability that he can't be everywhere at once. He can't control everything.
His weakness is people.
And or his humanity.
His humanity.
I'll just sit back because Chris just keeps saying everything I'm about to do.
Like, it's cool to see a character like that have his humanity question because you don't see it with a lot of, like, other heroes. I mean, I think the closest you might see maybe in Marvel, for example, I think is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because he questions his humanity and his self-doubt a lot.
Well, that kind of comes to the fact that most other heroes are human. He's not.
Right,
but
right.
But he thinks he's human.
Yeah.
Because he has that mindset.
He thinks he's people.
Yeah.
He thinks he's people.
And that's such an interesting thing, the fact that we're writing about a character, a fictional man who thinks he's human. And that it goes so meta when you kind of look into that, realizing just how different and his perspective must be towards people. And then you look at some of the Elseworlds story where he realizes, I can't be like people, so I will rule them. Red Sun, for example, Injustice, mm-hmm. where basically I can't be people, so in order to protect them from themselves, I will do what is necessary.
Well, sometimes it really makes you wonder what his view of humanity is, because not in every incarnation, but in quite a few, when he comes up with this reporter persona, for lack of a better term, of Clark Kent, to blend in with humanity, he's very, very clumsy, and he kind of goes over the top and out of his way to hide his powers to the point where he's dropping things that he could grab six times over before they hit the ground and everything. And it's like, is that how he sees us?
and yeah, it's interesting, like, to see. I think part of that is just, you know, a lot of people playing it up for humor, like writers being like, oh, check out,
it's
Superman
funny.
Spilled his coffee. but like, But yeah, there's an interesting like meta commentary, like you were saying, on humanity, and I think that again is what is so enduring about this character. I think all good stories, to a certain extent, make us question ourselves or make us think about who we are and the nature of humanity, because that's something that everyone can connect to.
Now let me ask you this: do you want to take this one step further? Because I warn you, once we go here, we can never go back.
I'm deadly afraid of what that means.
Okay.
But let's do it. All right.
Clark Kent is a reporter.
Yep.
Existing in a major metropolitan city. That city still has crime. How many people does he let die per day?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's let die. Like a point.
But the point is he could save them. That's the point.
I don't think he could. That's the thing. I don't think Superman can be everywhere at once.
And that's what Chris was saying earlier, is that he can't.
That's why
he's
got a super robot.
I feel like.
I go dark, you bring in the fucking robot.
I feel like he, in doing this, while his motives and everything were pure and good, he really did kind of bite off more than he could chew, because he's the only Superman for the entire planet. You know, and I mean, yeah, fine, there's tons of heroes, but he's the only Superman.
I guess you could maybe say everywhere at once. You could maybe argue Supergirl or Power Girl could come in and help. But still,
even with three of them, they're still can't be everywhere at once.
Because I imagine as Clark Kent working at the Daily Planet, can you imagine how many crime reports must come across the news desk every day? So and so was murdered. There was this, that, and the other thing. Fire, and you weren't there to help.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why he did the reporter job is because he could figure out which crimes were the ones that needed his attention more than others.
So
also, if you know,
so that's a God complex. Then.
He is playing God. Yes, he is playing God.
Think about that. I mean, a guy who can do that so many times over, and like we were just discussing, the fact that it's his humanity. We've given him the chance to play God.
Well, okay, in the New 52 right now, they've got Superman is not with Lois Lane at this point. He's with Wonder Woman. Okay, and yes, there's a collective sigh around the table. But you know what?
You know what? It's not the first time that it's happened.
Exactly.
So,
however, in Justice League number 20, Batman actually confronts Superman and says, look, you got to stop dating Wonder Woman. And Superman's like, why?
Bros before hoes.
You know? And he's like, because we need Wonder Woman to be able to take you down if you fly off the handle and vice versa. Mm-hmm. You guys are the epitome of godliness. And you're the only thing that we have to stop each other. And if you become connected to each other, then we might as well just cash our chips in now.
And then, I mean, look at the end of Kingdom Come, where they wind up actually... again, getting together like they have in the regular DC universe right now, and conceive a child. I mean, we don't see what happens to that child, but how powerful is the offspring of Superman and Wonder Woman going to be?
Are we please talking about superhero sex right now?
We can always bring in the Mallrats conversation. Well,
yeah. Exactly. Like a shot through Lois Lane's back. That's all I'm going to say.
But I think it's really interesting that there are, I think, because like the DC Elseworlds where they tell these like alternate tellings, mm-hmm. I would argue that most of a healthy percentage of those books are all Superman related. Right, like because there is so much there that you want to know and you want to think about. Like we're just
what if he,
exactly
what if he landed in Russia?
And it's really cool to think about, like when you know, because other superheroes, when you think about the world that they inhabit, you know, you can it's easier to gloss over those. Like, well, you know, he's Batman. Batman can only fight what he's got in front of him.
Yeah,
but the when you talk about Superman dealing with all these issues, it's sort of. It's weird. Like it's easier to imagine him having to deal with these actual issues and being at the crime desk and seeing all these stories come across, and it's just really, really cool to be able to have that fully formed world and to have this character that inhabits it. That while you know, ironically, being the most overpowered superhero, he's still to a certain extent the most relatable. And that's another one of those like. What's the word? Differences,
dichotomies.
Thank you. That's one of the dichotomies about the character is that while being super powerful, he's the most relatable. While being this powerful godlike character, he still has his humanity that separates him from a lot of these other characters. And to come back to what I was talking about with like the archetypes of a story, how important do you think Lois Lane is to the Superman mythos?
You know, I think
it varies from era to era.
Yeah,
I think it does vary from era to era. I mean, she's one of those characters that's been in Superman that, again, depending on what writer or creative team has control of her, she's either just in the way or she's actually useful. I mean, and it really depends on who's writing her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yes, she is Superman's, you know, love interest and has been, you know, for a very long time.
But sometimes she feels just kind of shoehorned in there.
Yeah,
like, oh, well, it's Lois Lane. We have to have her in the story somewhere, so.
And she always has to be this super empowered woman, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for feminist writing in comics.
But she always throws herself into trouble knowing that Superman's there to save her. And you know what? It's funny. This is kind of back to that whole... One story with the old lady who kept thinking she was going to be saved by Superman. I mean, Lois Lane has this, oh, Superman's going to swoop in and save me so I can put my neck in the most dangerous situation I can. If I want to crawl through that nuclear reactor while 3,000 people are firing guns at me, no problem. Superman's got my back.
This kind of comes back to something Mike had said earlier. What happens if, in the midst of trying to save a family from a burning building, Superman suddenly hears, oh God, Lois is falling to her death again. And someone dies because he had to save Lois. Because that's, as you were saying, playing God. And that's taking a preference because, for the most part, he's in love with this woman.
Exactly. And that's... See, I love Superman because you can put him in the moral dilemma. You can give him the most difficult moral choices.
Oh, you could totally play up the Green Goblin sadistic choice with him. Save Lois or save this busload of kids. I mean...
Now, you can't do it in the same way because he'd just do both. He's that fast. But,
but it's not to say there are ways where you could totally screw him over. See, Superman is the one hero that it wouldn't be hard to corrupt him in certain ways. That book that I bought off you, Chris, Incorruptible or whatever.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Great book.
If Superman went nuts, it's possible.
Oh, we're God, yes.
Because if Superman, like I said, if... Like we've all just said, aw, he thinks he's people. What if he realizes he's not and just, that's it. I'm going to rule this planet my way, and there's going to be no problems, and if you don't like it, you die now. It wouldn't be that hard, because Superman is a hero whose major weakness outside of kryptonite is his humanity. And the Green Goblin's sadistic choice, placed at him enough times, once again, depending on who's writing it, could really destroy him.
Here's an easy one. Okay, I toss Lois off the bridge. If you catch her, the bus explodes.
Yeah. What are you gonna
do? Then he only has one choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if he does save her, you know, he can't do both.
And it wouldn't be hard for him. And another thing is he cares what people think. Mm-hmm. So if you can turn public opinion against him,
yeah,
that's another thing.
Well, there was a Michael J. Straczynski run, the last run of Superman before the New 52 reboot, and I'm getting rolling eyes from Jamie as we speak right now.
No. This ties into what I'd like to talk about next, but go ahead.
The story arc was called Grounded, and it was basically Superman chose not to fly, and he basically walked across America and solved the problems of the common man.
So wasn't that in Forrest Gump?
But here's the context, because it was just after the new Krypton arc, right, where a bunch of Kryptonians showed up, and like suddenly he wasn't alone anymore. But at the same time, there were all these superpowered characters who didn't have the fundamental humanity that Clark/Superman did. So it was chaos, and he was, you know, matched power for power by these characters. And then Grounded is a really interesting idea for a book. I have severe problems with the execution, but like the idea of him going and connecting with regular people is important. Like that idea of being able to really connect with his humanity is really cool. And, you know, it is a really weird and fascinating sight to read in a comic of Superman just walking down the street. But then what he does, and this, I'd be curious to know, we can talk about like maybe like writers who really have done good things with Superman, or if there are any other stories you want to recommend.
One thing I just wanted to tag on to what Mike was saying, as far as the, if Superman snaps, I think to an extent he's almost prepared for that. This is why, again, in most incarnations of Superman, if, you know, Batman is brought in, he's given that kryptonite ring. He's the one that Clark trusts the most, that if he goes down, or if he goes down that path, that at least there's somebody that has something that can stop him.
Yeah, and it's cool that gets addressed.
Even then, if Superman wanted to kill Batman, he could pop him like a grape. That's the thing, too.
Then if you go and see like the Dark Knight Returns, that whole battle in that alternate future between Superman and Batman is sort of a thing as well.
Yeah.
But getting on to Grounded, the fascinating thing about that character is in that story, Superman is connecting to people by being an absolute dick to them. He comes up to a guy who's sitting on, like, an old man sitting in his rocking chair, and he comes up to him. He's like, hey, I couldn't help noticing you've got, like, lung cancer. Better get that checked out. And then he just walks away.
Well, yeah, but he's not trying to be.
I know, but the way, and this is how I feel Superman gets harm written, when he's written like that god, when that god element is played up.
I think my personal favorite one and the grounded one was when he goes to the crack-ridden neighborhood and he burns all the houses down with his heat vision.
Oh yeah,
just to stop the crack dealers.
Yeah. Oh, but that, and then he tells like this 5-year-old kid out in the street. And he's like, when those drug dealers come out, give them a message for me. That kid's dead, hey, Superman. Oh, yeah. they're gonna be like, the drug dealers are gonna come out with murder in their eyes, and there's like a 5-year-old kid with some ice cream.
Superman told me he's gonna mess up you guys if you do this again, and
you
the kid's dead. And
now,
then, yeah, I know. And then the kid's dead. But that features one of the greatest. There's two really great. It's issue 701. Again, for like hate reading, you need to get a copy of this just to read through it and be like, holy crap. There's two great monologues. One is when Superman describing just after he burns the drugs, he's like, over there has to take care of itself, because only when there is here can we truly be a free society. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that sounds like Anchorman level stupid.
Yeah, and but it's when he's written, when Superman is written as this perfect, in like giant quotations, character, that's when he loses the things that make him a great character.
Now something I would like to go, because we're going to be running out of time shortly, but one thing is, for such a rare element, why is it that kryptonite seems to be like in every corner grocery store, and every supervillain seems to have like a stockpile to this? I mean,
plot convenience.
At least we got rid of the rainbow kryptonite, you know, like the pink stuff
that made
him change gender. Or there was like the red one that just made him real angry.
Or the gold that purposely made him.
And gold takes away his powers. Or some
exactly.
Shit like
exactly.
That.
Purple just gave him hives.
But at the same time, like kryptonite, as far as it's pieces of Krypton, correct?
Yes.
Yes. So basically, this planet exploded.
And somehow,
how god awful far away.
Physics have no place in this conversation.
No, nobody noticed that every single piece. Like, basically, why doesn't. I realize it hurts him, but why doesn't he get somebody to just collect all the pieces of kryptonite and just make it the world's biggest jigsaw puzzle? And
if
put
he's
it
so
to,
smart,
here's
he
his planet.
Be able to develop some kind of an immunity against it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Batman, nanites, and shit.
If I could just to put a little bow on this conversation, I'd like to just go around and for each of you guys, if I could get like, you know, what's the best Superman story you can think of, or like what's the best Superman story, what's the worst, the most ignoble moment in Superman's history, and predictions for Man of Steel.
Oh God.
Okay, right. so here's the thing. I got this one. For the best Superman story, I recommend, not the best, but a really good one, going back and watching the old Superman animated series from like the mid-90s with Tim Daly as Superman.
The Bruce Tim Paul Dini style.
Which actually is a marathon for those American listeners. It's on the Hub on Friday.
Okay, yeah, watch that. The first three episodes alone are just a beautiful Superman origin story, really classic, gets to the heart of the character. The worst... and by which I mean most fascinating for me, because that's how I roll, is the whole Death of Superman fiasco.
Yeah.
My sister was a huge Superman fan when we were growing up, and she had all those, and she was like getting all the books, and I would read through it, and I'm like, the Guardian? What? I don't even know what's going on.
He's just a guy with like a shield.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah, the Death and the Return, the whole...
And I was going to actually bring up the Death of Superman and and whatnot anyway, but... I think the concept of him stopping the unstoppable force and killing himself in the process was brilliantly done, and it was a heroic death. Mind you, the fiasco that ensued afterwards with the Rent-A-Supermans all claiming to be Superman, and then him just coming back, oh, I just recharged my batteries.
And I've got a mullet.
The Eradicator looked cool, and so did the Cyborg Superman.
Exactly. Cyborg Superman is still around today as one of his
big villains.
Villains.
My favorite thing about the Eradicator was his granny bingo glasses,
yeah.
Though. Like, those things were sweet. Those were so awesome.
Ooh, yeah.
I think it was a very awesome concept, and the cleanup on it was just very
poorly done. And again, going back to the idea of myth, the myth dying is that's why it was such a big moment, and why every comic series after has tried to capitalize on that.
Okay, here's my best for Superman.
Yeah.
The best story is in Elseworlds, Red Sun.
Nice.
The worst.
Got it here, yeah.
The death of Superman. Here's why. Superman killed Death in comics.
Yes.
Everybody has come back since. In fact, I'm actually going to post a video.
Is that the Max Landis?
Yes.
Yes, it's so good. You have
to
watch
it. It's amazing. Just Elijah Wood and flying around doing lantern shit. that's what Superman did. He killed Death. And that is the worst thing he's ever done to comics, the end.
Yeah.
That and seeing people's souls. That's just fucking stupid.
And well, and the mullet.
Yeah.
And that mullet. That mullet was brutal.
Mm-hmm. All right. My favorite Superman story actually is Emperor Joker. I love the whole Superman having his memory wiped, the Joker being in control of Mitzi's powers, and Superman having to figure it out, and all the other heroes being completely reworked by Mitzel Plitznik. I love the story. The art by McGinnis was friggin' amazing.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the fun that's in Superman when he's done correctly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My worst, the worst Superman moments was when they split him into the two energy-based beings, red and blue Superman.
Hell, that was so stupid.
that was a product of the 90s. I apologize to everybody on behalf of DC for that one.
That was,
yeah. Where there was two Supermans flying around, made of energy.
Right.
The red Superman and the blue Superman.
Well,
so.
I'll start with my worst because it's actually the exact same as yours. The red and the blue. It just seemed like such a hokey idea. And you look at the images of the red and the blue Superman suits, or what if they were suits, or just him, his energy and everything, and they just scream 90s comics.
Oh yeah.
And they redid the logo. It was like it was all sharp and like it was like, look at this boss logo.
I was expecting it in almost every issue to be foil.
it was horrendous. And as far as the best, I'm probably gonna have to go. I already mentioned it. For The Man Who Has Everything by Alan Moore. Dave Gibbons was the artist. Fantastic stuff. Two-part story, I believe, or it might be.
I think it was from an annual, so it's
it was
annual,
a,
yeah,
so
it was expanded.
It's an oversized issue, just because you see him almost come to the breaking point. Like he was actually just about ready to kill Mongul, and you don't often see him that upset and be able to let go that much and still almost go too far. Like had Wonder Woman, Batman, and Robin not been there, he might have actually crossed that line. And if he does cross that line, there's no coming back. And Mike said it too, if you can't get your hands on the issues, they do a just about pretty faithful recreation in Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And they condense it into a nice 30-minute episode, and they hit all the right points, and the voice cast does an excellent job. And that's one of my favorites. Another from Alan Moore I just wanted to at least mention is Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
So good.
Another seminal Superman story, if you can ever find that.
Because that ended, it ended the Action Comics run before John Byrne rebooted it in like 87, right?
And that's it. It's it's kind of like a final send-off for Superman.
And
it is just such a
story. And if I can't say enough about how good this DC Universe Alan Moore collection is. It's if you want to really get what's so great about DC, that's probably one of the best books to do it. You get the whole universe.
Yeah.
All right, well, guys, that's pretty much all the time we're going to have on this episode of Beyond the Gauntlet. Now, we are going to be talking Superman on This Week in Geeks topic show, which will be towards the end of the month. Stay tuned for our review of Man of Steel coming out later on this week after our E3 coverage. And, so for Beyond the Gauntlet, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with...
Jamie McBurney, and remember, Man of Steel, Zack Snyder's got a spotty track record, but it could be good. Image of him in chains is awesome, and I hope the Krypton actually exploded.
I'm Jeff DeHaan, and if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Gauntlet Podcast.
And I'm Chris Peddle, the owner and operator of the Gauntlet, and the owner of the last pleated piece of plaid kryptonite.